This is On and Off Your Mat podcast, episode 221. Are you a high achiever or a perfectionist? If you're always striving to do better, but tend to be generally dissatisfied with your results, you might have perfectionistic tendencies without even realizing. And if you aim to or are high achieving, but you don't see yourself as a perfectionist because your life is not picture perfect, or you even think of yourself as lazy, today's episode might change the way you see yourself and your whole life. For today's episode, I sat down with Rachel Dornianu, LPC, NCC. Rachel is an individual and premarital couples psychotherapist. She works with ages 16 and up and specializes in anxiety, boundaries, highly sensitive people, perfectionism, premarital counseling, and sex therapy. She offers outdoor walk and talk sessions in Cumming, Georgia, and online session for Georgia, South Carolina, and Florida resident in the US. She makes therapy convenient and easy to fit into your busy life, and clients that work with her appreciate her humor and straightforward, adaptable approach. They like that she meets them where they are and they work together on goals. We sat down today to talk about how to know if you are a perfectionist or if you're just a high achieving person, why it's so prevalent in sensitive people, the types of perfectionism that exist, and tools to reduce and eventually overcome your perfectionistic tendencies, including how to deal with conflict better. If this episode inspires you in any way, share it and help someone else on their journey towards being kinder and more balanced. I always love to read your takeaways on the episode, so take a screenshot of the episode and share something you've learned on Instagram, making sure to tag either at On and Off Your Mat Podcast or erica.belanger so I can see them and reshare you. All right, if you're ready to jump into today's episode with Rachel, let's go. It's going to be a good one. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm so well. How about you?
Good, good. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you for joining me today. I'm excited to talk about this too. We are talking about perfectionism today, and it's a subject that comes up a lot with my coaching clients. So I think this is going to be a super helpful episode. Before we really dive in our subject of today, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your own journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a Atlanta, Georgia-based therapist. And so I work with, gosh, I say 90% of my caseload is perfectionist high achievers. So I feel like I somewhat know the population we're about to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Work with highly sensitive people. That's why I reached out to Erica and how this worked out. Besides that, I'm a recovering perfectionist. So trying to work on that and find ways to be kinder to myself, kinder to others, especially as a mom, finding ways to balance all the things, including running a business, is super fun for me. The other reason that I wanted to talk with Erica was because I'm finishing up my yoga teacher training. I'm almost done. Fantastic blend.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I feel like perfectionism is so common in highly sensitive people. It's almost like it's a trait that's part of the bigger umbrella of being sensitive. Why does it manifest so much in sensitive people?
Oh, well, keeping in mind, it depends on the person.
Of course.
Things I've noticed, at least in my practice, has been that the highly sensitive people are trying to find control, trying to find a way to have some grasp on their life, on reality, of how they're interacting with people, themselves, the environment, stimuli, so many other factors of life, of let me find a way to perfect this one routine, or be able to handle my grades, be able to handle a certain project and deadlines, and maybe even how I manage a team. That if I can manage that and do that well, I have a sense of control when the rest of the world feels absolutely nuts.
Mm-hmm. So that sense of control then is to create a sense of safety.
Exactly. And then, as you know, I'm sure with perfectionists, there's a big root in a sense of from shame. And if we don't have safety, we can feel fear, shame, guilt, disappointment, so many other negative emotions, if you will. And that's a lot of what's wrapped up in perfectionism as well.
How does shame relate directly to perfectionism? Is it in the sense of we are doing everything we can to avoid that sense of shame? And that's a strategy to do that.
Absolutely. Because I know personally that when I was in school, I was a very all A's academic kind of person that I needed to do well to succeed. So big values of achievement, ambition, dedication, all those kind of things. I do a lot of values clarification with my clients. And the way that we try and get away from shame in the beginning before we start working on therapy and coaching and that kind of thing, as we will avoid it as much as humanly possible. We will stay up studying for hours to avoid shame of getting a bad grade, of having to tell our parents about a bad report card, in terms of dealing with friends that they have to make sure they are a picture perfect friend, that they know everything about the friend, in terms of social anxiety, so that way they have no concerns of what to talk about next. Gosh, it manifests everywhere.
Mm. I mean, nobody wants to experience shame. Like, let's be honest, it's not a fun thing. But do you think that highly sensitive people experience it more often or just more intensely than average people?
Good question. I would say that I'm so torn. It's both. It's honestly both.
It's a trick question.
It's honestly both. I was trying to feel like which one feels more. No, it's both, because I've personally experienced, not that I'm, you know, pulling from personal experience only when I'm therapizing, if you will, but
of course,
it can feel really intense and really painful to have shame or to have perfectionism going on, to feel this need to, gosh, do everything, do better, be better kind of thing. So HSPs will definitely feel that intensely, but there's also a big pressure from themselves or even assumed from authority figures, from outside forces as well.
Yeah, I think there's a very common not enoughness sense as a, you know, sensitive person. And at the same time, and I say this often, a too much, like you're not enough and too much at the same time, which is like such a confusing place to be in. So if we have perfectionistic tendencies, let's say, how does that impact the rest of our well-being? Because you kind of touched on it a little bit, but can we open that a little bit more and see what's there?
Yeah. So with perfectionistic tendencies, so there's three main types of perfectionism out there. There's self-oriented perfectionism, of where it's all about you. There's other-oriented perfectionism, of where it's your expectations on others and they're failing to meet the expectations you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's societal expectations, socially prescribed perfectionism, of where you feel like there's authority figures or outside forces putting expectations on you that you're not meeting. So those are the three main types of perfectionism. I know there's different articles out there that say there's way more. I just like to keep it easy and keep three. But besides that, in terms of how it affects your life, gosh, it can be your professional accomplishments. It can be how you parent. It can be your appearance, your body weight. It can be your schoolwork and academics in the past. It can be your athletic ability, your physical environment, your relationship, how your home life is. It can truly, unfortunately, like meddle in and dig in to every single part of your life. And that can be scary.
Mm-hmm. And I also think like the thing that is confusing about perfectionism is that the reason we do it is to feel better in a sense, right? It's to create that sense of safety. It's to create that grasp on life, that control you were talking about. We use it looking for something positive in the outcome, but then in the long run, it has like a negative outcome. What happens in between both?
Oh, what happens in between both?
I mean, why do we think it's going to be positive versus like the result is actually not positive? We do a lot of these things in life, you know, like all the coping mechanism are basically that, whether you're reaching for food or for alcohol or, you know, there's all sorts of things we do to help ourselves in the moment, because for a short moment, it feels better. So like in this case, it feels better and more urgent to avoid shame rather than avoid the longer term consequence of the perfectionism, let's say extra anxiety or whatever you might experience in the end, right? It's like shame is more urgent. So we deal with that and we forget or we look away from what's going to happen next.
Sure. At least for the clients that I've worked with perfectionism, is that the strive for things to go well, that for better or for worse, comes a lot from upbringing. So it's more of the nurture situation. Sure, there's some bits that you may have inherited in some way, shape, or form, but a lot of is the nature-nurture debate is more of nurture. It's what you were surrounded by, how your parents were, your caregivers, coaches, of teachers, of that kind of thing. There was an expectation to do well. And perhaps you decided to, hey, I want to succeed and do well in their eyes. So I'm going to continue to do this. And because I did that well one time, hey, maybe I'll do that again. And you start creating a cycle, you start creating a routine. At one point, it served you well, right? Maybe in school world, it served you well.
Validation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. We created that cycle. Well, it's really important to have the acceptance and validation for ourselves that it happened. But it's also a way that we need to tell ourselves to be nicer to ourselves and slow down. Because if we keep doing that, we're in the rat race and we're going to get burned out and exhausted and need one of your retreats or something like that to recover. And I'd hate for anybody to be stuck in this perfectionistic cycle, hitting burnout and then taking a breather and then going right back into the same routine. Slow down, guys. You got to take it easy. Be nicer to yourself.
Yeah. There's also the idea that you're basically setting yourself up for failure all the time, because there's not such a thing as perfect on everything all the time. Like, it doesn't exist. It's unrealistic. And so if you're setting that for yourself, you're constantly going to be disappointed in yourself, in your result, in the people around you. Like, it's really hard to actually appreciate and enjoy the good things, because your focus is always on what's missing, what's not there, what's not good enough. Really hurts in the long run as well.
I completely agree. I had a client last week that was talking about that, of not ever having anything be good enough. And I was like, what's something that's good in your life? Can you find three good things that happened today? There's actually a really good app that's free, at least in the US, that it's called Three Good Things, and it's got like a cute little smiley face on it. It'll challenge you to come up with three good things that happened that day. So let's say you woke up. Congrats. That's one good thing. You had a glass of water. If we need to start there and be like, that's literally my baseline, is I woke up, I had water, and I took a shower. Fantastic. That's your three good things. If we need to raise the bar a tad higher, maybe we're a bit more functioning, find some other things. I don't know, save 2 minutes on your commute this morning to work. Fantastic. It's hard to notice those things when you're stuck in such a negative headspace.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And the other thing that's interesting, for some reason, I think a lot of people don't see themselves as perfectionistic, even when they are. I know for myself, for a very long time, I didn't put that label on me. But yet, like, you know, I grew up with like a family mantra of like, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well kind of thing. And, you know, like things like that. And my parents were very validating when it came to like accomplishment and school success. Like, that was really important for them. And they were expressing their love and their pride through these accomplishments. So, of course, I am a perfectionistic, or in recovery, I would say as well.
Right.
But for most of my life, if you would have asked me, are you? I'd be like, not really. I just strive to do good, like as if that was something completely different. Right. So can you talk a little bit about how do we know if we are, like, what are actually the sign of being a perfectionist person or having those tendencies versus being a high achiever? Like, where's the line between those two things?
Oh, that's a great question. It makes me want to make an Instagram post about that later. The things that I've noticed, and I'll tell you, you're not alone in that. There's so many times that I'll have a potential client reach out and they'll say, hey, you know, I really want to work on my anxiety, on my stress management, on my relationship, whatever it might be.
But I'm not a perfectionist.
Right. And so I'll end up getting, you know, further into their background history. I'm like, you realize you're a perfectionist, right? And they're like, what are you talking about? That's not real. That's not a thing. I'm fine. Are you? You seem pretty stressed. So of course I say it in a kind, nurturing way, but it's shocking how many people don't identify that way in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So the long lead in, the reason for that is, at least in the US, I don't know about wherever else you listeners are in the world, but in the US, there's such an expectation of you will do well, you will succeed.
That's the baseline.
Right. It's the baseline, which is not okay. But where we are, it is what it is. It's almost that if you're not doing well, then how are you a perfectionist? Because you're not doing well. So there's that piece. There's high expectations for yourself of, like, you know, you need to have high grades. You need to have I don't know, maybe a really great home with nice things, need to have a picture perfect romance with your soulmate that if you're cracking up, but I hear it all the time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm cracking up because I in some way relate and I hear my own students as well, right?
Exactly. I mean, gosh, that's just a small handful of things that I've heard of, well, my boyfriend needs to do this. My wife needs to do this. And I'm like, why do they need to? It's a lot of the language I hear as well. It's like a need, a should, supposed to, must. It's this enforced standard that people have for others or for themselves. If I need to do well on this exam or I won't get into grad school, what happens if you don't? It's okay if you don't. Maybe that's not your life path right now. Maybe something else happened. Maybe life happened. And I like to play devil's advocate and just kind of toss in a what if. And they're like, that's not allowed. That's not okay. It's like, well, unfortunately, you're not God. You're not a higher power. You cannot control the universe and how your life is going to go. There's so much of our lives that we cannot control.
So annoying.
If we find a way to control the world, Erica, let me know. We'll be billionaires. But we're not there yet.
Yep. So what I'm hearing is that people don't necessarily identify as perfectionist because their life is not picture perfect, meaning they're still struggling. So they're like, well, obviously I'm not a perfectionistic. Otherwise, everything would be perfect. Like they equate their actions to the result, basically.
Exactly.
And one way to kind of take a step back and look at yourself and ask yourself if you are you using these words a lot? You have to, you need, you must, you should, or the people around you have to, need, should, or must. I think that's an easy kind of tool to people to play with.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And there's, I don't know how much the listeners or yourself use cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. There's a whole list of unhelpful thinking patterns, cognitive distortions, if you will. If you're seeing a lot of all or nothing thinking, so black and white thinking, if you're seeing a lot of
catastrophe,
exactly, catastrophizing, jumping to conclusions, this is the end of the world, even personalization of this is about me. But not necessarily. That reaction could have been something entirely about them.
Or it means this about me.
Right. And so I think that for your listeners, if it helps to even just do a quick Google search of cognitive distortions, unhelpful thinking patterns, just take a look at that for a moment and see, is this something I'm doing? Oh, maybe I should, you know, talk to somebody about this.
Yeah, I feel like it's not, is it something I'm doing? But it's like, how much am I doing this?
Absolutely. No, this is fun.
So then if we want to be goal-oriented, if we want to be high-achieving, how do we pursue our goals without getting caught into perfectionism?
Oh, I have a really good tool for this. So I want you to think about a spectrum. You've got a 0 on one end, a 100 on the other end, and then I want you to find somewhere on that line an 80%. So a 0 on the perfectionism spectrum. Some things that come to mind for me would be lazy or selfish, no drive, no work ethic, for lack of a better word, scum of the earth kind of thing. Like, I don't know about you, but I hear like really negative things in my head and also in my clients' heads as well of like what a 0 is on the perfectionism spectrum.
Failure.
Right. Failure. Absolutely. And then on the 100 side, it's all A's, all perfect academics. It's scoring the top accounts if you're in sales and marketing. It's making well over a certain amount of income because that way you're doing well. You have a marker of success that everything's going according to plan. Everything's clean and tidy and fantastic at home, which is not realistic. No one has that, by the way. And then an 80% is ideally the perfect perfectionist. If you really need to have that word in there, that label in there, being a perfect perfectionist, 80% is great because one, you're not hitting burnout. You're not hitting exhaustion and stress on yourself and on others. You're achieving well. You have decent goals and things and plans for your life, but you still have some flexibility in there that you're able to breathe and take a beat and be like, if XYZ happens or doesn't happen, it's not the end of the world. It's okay. I can find a way to get through this and still keep working towards my goal if I need to.
Mm-hmm. I actually teach that, but just with a different word. I teach a lot of my students that B plus is good enough.
Ooh, that too. That's a fun one.
Like, get it done. Like, we know, like, done is better than perfect. But for people, just like the 80, like, to see that mark and that kind of target and be like, aim for a B plus. A B plus, it's done and it's good.
Exactly.
It's good enough. Like, it's fine. Keep going, you know, and just keep moving forward and just get a B plus.
That sounds wonderful. Yeah, I'm okay with a B plus.
But that's hard for people already. They're like, B plus? No, what are you talking about? Why B plus when I could get an A?
Oh, absolutely. And then same with some of the students I've worked with that are in high school right now in the US, that they will say, I need to have, in terms of GPA, the way they measure their scoring is that typically you have a 4.0. If you have all A's, you're doing quite well. There's people that are taking advanced classes and they're saying, well, I need to have 4.5 GPA. What? How? Do you breathe? Do you sleep? Well, how are you supposed to achieve that? And then they do dual enrollment. They go and do high school and college at the same time. Do you have time to enjoy being a kid anymore? It's so sad, at least to me.
Mm-hmm. So let's say we are aiming for B plus or 80%. What other strategy can we start to implement so we can reduce either the effect of perfectionism or our pull, our need to strive for it?
Ooh, great question.
Like, do we start with shame and like working on our own relationship with shame? Like, what are the kind of foundational things we need to think about if we want to eventually change the way we perceive ourselves and what we must, need, and have to do in this world?
Right. The things that come to my mind would be noticing the unhelpful thinking patterns, noticing our emotions that are coming up, noticing any physical sensations going on. I'm a big fan of mind-body connection, holistic kind of stuff here, because if you're not noticing what's going on in you, you may not be noticing the things going on outside of you, your behaviors, your interactions with other people. So I would start there. And I'm a big fan of journaling. So if it helps to just talk about your day from a non-judgmental place of, this is what happened to me today. Everything was horrible and awful and negative. Okay, that's where you are. Can we find something a little bit less hateful in that? Can you find one good thing from that, a silver lining? Can you, from there, maybe work on affirmations or mantras or something that's gentle and kind and infusing positivity into your day rather than just noticing that you woke up this morning? Maybe something of like, I am smart. I am capable. I am strong. I am enough. The saying those kind of affirmations and mantras can be so helpful. The other thing is being mindful of, honestly, our emotional reactions. I notice a lot of perfectionists tend to have a lot of irritability and anger and impulsive things because they're reacting. So being mindful of our reactions, pausing before you say something, pausing before you explode at someone of, is what I'm about to say helpful? Is what I'm about to say something that's going to hurt me or someone else in the long run? That noticing those things can be helpful. That's probably where I would start.
Mm.
Anything you would add?
Yeah. What I'm hearing is mindfulness, working on your thoughts, your beliefs at some level, your emotions, but also like your reactivity. So learning how to actually feel your feelings probably so you don't snap in irritability or you don't become angry as much. You can live those feelings a little bit more, probably going to pile up less. And then staying connected with yourself. We talked about body sensations, journaling. And I also heard, although you didn't say in these words, focus, like what you choose to focus on, basically, like moving away from the negative towards more positive things and self-compassion.
Absolutely.
What's the role of self-compassion in letting go of our tendency for perfectionism?
Ooh, besides that it's a huge, huge foundation of it, that we are typically, especially if we're self-oriented perfectionist, we don't even notice that there's a lack of self-compassion. It's not even something on our radar because we're so focused on the result, on the goal, on the end of something or the next hurdle, the next obstacle. There's many clients that They're like, well, once I do this, this happens. Once I do this, then I can breathe. That's not how life works. We can't just be on this never-ending marathon. That sounds horrible.
Mm-hmm.
If we're able to notice that there's a lack of self-compassion, I think that's the first step, is the awareness that it's not there. And then finding ways slowly but surely to reframe our thinking, to reframe how we interact with ourselves, our brain, our everything. That's helpful to have that noticing, the mindfulness that you mentioned. From there, having self-compassion. I mean, gosh, I have plenty of fun resources and workbooks if you want me to send links for that. I'm a big workbook nerd. And so having something tangible for my clients typically is fun, honestly, because a lot of perfectionists do well with school-based learning. And you're nodding, you're like,
Yeah, we love a good workbook.
A good workbook, a fun book. I do a lot of like therapy book club with my clients as well. Is read this chapter. Tell me what you thought. Did it apply to you? Oh, it's so fun. But back to self-compassion is that we need to, I mean, this is going to sound either woo-woo or deep, if you will, but think of the things that you needed to say to your younger self. Think of the things that your parents didn't say to you that you need to start saying to almost reparent yourself. There's so much, at least that I've noticed, there's so much trauma based in perfectionism as well, that we need to find a way to be kinder to ourselves when it may not have happened, from ourselves, from coaches, from parents, caregivers, extended family, that you need to find a way to say those things to yourself that we're missing.
Yeah. And also, I had a little light come up. It might be a way to like tap into self-compassion, if that's hard for listeners, is to look for pleasure and like enjoy the journey instead of only the end result. And I feel like the more you can take time in your day to savor what is happening, the more you're able to go to the 80% or the B plus, because in the moment also matters, not only the end results, your expectations of what it's supposed to look like, what you're trying to achieve. But if you're able to be in your body in the moment, in your emotions in the moment, and you're able to tap into pleasure, naturally, I feel like it connects you more to also your self-compassion.
Absolutely. The self-care, the coping skills that are healthy coping skills. Absolutely. I agree.
Okay. There's one thing you said earlier that I wanted to come back to, and it was about being lazy. Because I feel like a lot of sensitive people will label themselves as lazy because either they're so overstimulated that they just can't anymore and they have to like collapse, or they're just stuck in their freeze state in their nervous system, and the body, the mind, everything is forcing them to like pause and stop and rest. And they see that as a proof that they are lazy.
Oh, that's sad to hear. Yeah. Yeah. I hear that all the time.
Yeah. So that's another sign or another reason that they might not see themselves as perfectionistic, because they're actually seeing themselves as lazy.
Absolutely. And honestly, one of the workbooks that I tend to use very often, there's an entire chapter about procrastination.
Yeah, that goes hand in hand too.
Absolutely.
With your emotions.
That, oh, well, if I can't do it perfectly, what's the point of doing it? If I can't get started on this, I'm never going to do it. What's the point? And all that all or nothing thinking. Absolutely. And then you mentioned with the nervous system and being overstimulated, being in freeze mode. Absolutely. I see that often as well, that you may think that you're not able to do certain things because you don't have the energy. You may have chronic fatigue. You may be burned out. There may be a million things going on. You may still be a perfectionist, though. So that's where I would direct you to talk, honestly, to one of us, but just to speak to a helping professional, someone that knows their stuff, that does specialize in highly sensitive people or perfectionists, to be like, is this something that I'm doing? Is this something that sounds like an HSP or a perfectionist? If so, help, because I'll tell you, there's a lot more of you in the world than you think there are, especially in the U.S.,
Are there stats on that?
Oh, I wish.
Yeah, I haven't seen stats on perfectionists.
No, not yet. If I find something, I'll send it to you. But right now, there's personally not enough out there. And there's not even enough word out about being highly sensitive either.
I agree.
We're working on it. We're trying to spread the word. You've got a whole podcast about it.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Anytime I talk to someone and I ask them, do you consider yourself highly sensitive? 90% of the time, it's like, no, like I have a sensitive side, but I'm not highly sensitive. And I'm like,
actually, maybe reconsider that. Here's a quiz. Here's something to think about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
No, that's fun.
Another thing I wanted to come back to is those three kind of categories of perfectionism when you talked about it being self-oriented, others-oriented, and social-oriented. And the one I wanted to talk about a little bit is the other-oriented, because I see a lot of highly sensitive or sensitive people that are very critical in their relationship. You know, they're critical of their partner and it really hurts their relationship. You know, it comes back to that self-compassion so you can offer it to someone else as well. But how do we let go of the idea that we have a responsibility in making our partner better for some reason in some way? How do we let them be them and like figure out their own life and yet be in this loving relationship and still cheering them on? Like, how do we do these things at the same time? Like, we're there for them and we're cheering them on, but we're also learning not to be critical and not taking responsibility for their growth and their life as well.
Ooh, I'll tell you that that's something that I'm consistently still working on in my own life, if that helps to relate to listeners. But it's also, gosh, it's really hard because there's something about, at least the ones of us that admit it, that we take on such a responsibility of, I need to make sure that this person's doing well. I need to make sure that I'm supporting them. And sometimes support becomes pushing, becomes nagging, when we can just dial it back a hair and be like, hey, I can support you from here. I love that you're working on X, Y, and Z. How can I support you in that? Rather than, did you do this today? Did you do that? Did you go to your meeting? Did you go to the gym? Right?
You know what you could do better. Yeah.
All the time. I hear that all the time. And it's like, slow down. Also, maybe turn the mirror on yourself. Hey, slow down. Would you want someone saying that to you? Would you say that to a friend? Would you say that to your mom? Would you say that to your partner? Hopefully not. If you are, please seek help. But things that I think are important is lowering the expectation, noticing that there's an expectation there. Is your audience aware of the four horsemen of the apocalypse? Of like the four main ways we handle conflict?
We haven't talked about this on the podcast, so probably some of them know.
Okay. I will try to run through this as quickly as possible. So there's the four main ways we handle conflict. So there's criticism, defensiveness, contempt, and stonewalling. You may have one of them, you may have all of them. We're not here to judge, just know where you are currently. And then there's four main ways to combat, or the antidote, if you will, to the four main ways that we handle conflict. And so the way to handle that is, if you tend to be really critical, like me, you will use something called gentle startup. That's where, instead of being like, did you do that thing? Why didn't you do that? It's, hey, could you help me with blank? I'd really appreciate it if you made it a priority to do this today. It would be a big help for me. It's a gentle lead in, easier said than done. But something to be aware of. The way to combat defensiveness is taking responsibility for your actions, which is also difficult. So instead of, I know I did this, but you did that, or shying away from responsibility, that we say, hey, my bad, I forgot to take out the trash last night, I'll do it this evening. And then the way to combat contempt is to describe your own feelings and needs and not describe your partner. So maybe it's, I feel frazzled when we're late to a dinner reservation and I need for us to be on time to enjoy our time together and look at the menu without being rushed. Nothing wrong with stating a need. That's a need that you have. I need to be on time so I'm not frazzled. Instead of saying something of like, I don't know, you lazy slime ball, why can't you tell time? Hopefully no one's using that phrasing, but an option. And then the way to combat stonewalling, which is emotional flooding, of where you're not just upset, like you mentioned, the nervous system, that you are physically not able to comprehend conversation anymore.
You're shut down.
Exactly. So it's the freeze response. And so what's happening is that your brain is not able to be there in a conversation any longer. Maybe it's a deer in headlights. Look, it could look different for everyone, but that's when you need to go and calm down, take a breather. Here's some fun studies, if you will, that it takes 20 minutes for cortisol, the stress hormone, to leave your bloodstream. which is a really long time. So go watch an episode of Friends without commercials. That's about 20 minutes. Make sure you're focusing on something that is not the argument, not the critical thing that you just got into. Slowing down, taking a breather, and then come back to that conversation when you're ready. That we got to find ways to notice how we handle conflict, how we handle criticizing and nagging, having high expectations of our partners, and finding ways to be a bit more gentle with them and gentle with ourselves.
That is so helpful. And I think it's a very kind of simple way to look at it. And I think most people can clearly see what is their preferred method, or like, obviously we do all of them. Like, I feel like I've done all of them. I think it depends for me on the type of conflict. There's some type of conflict where I'm going to have a tendency more to shut down. And there's some types of conflict where I'm going to have a tendency more to be defensive versus being critical. I think, you know, those are definitely more in my experience, but it really depends, like, what's happening. Is the person telling me I've done something wrong versus, you know, like, what's the context? Then the response is going to be different. But I think that's super helpful for people to start to watch themselves, like take a step back. Maybe in the moment it's difficult, but like you can look at your last disagreement. Doesn't have to be a big fight, but the last time, you know, someone said something to you and you were either critical, defensive, or, you know, or any of these other options. So I think that's a great tool to start to look into.
Good. I'm glad. It's helpful for me as well.
Good. All right. We're going to start to wrap it up. I feel like there's more we can talk about, but I think people have a few things to start to play with for now. Anything else you want to add before we finish? If there's like one takeaway you'd like listeners to leave with, or if there's one thing that we haven't mentioned, you're like, okay, we need to talk about this before we finish. Is there something in particular?
Oh, that's so tough. The things that I would encourage with the perfectionist and highly sensitive people is just to practice the mindfulness, practice the meditations, the being aware of your mind and body connection, being aware of your nervous system, just gathering that awareness first without judgment. And I really want to stress that piece. We're not judging here. We're not saying, oh, why do you think that? Why'd you do that thing? You shouldn't be feeling that way. Just notice it. Just gain the awareness. Maybe take notes on it. See how you're feeling. Notice any patterns. Maybe it's morning, afternoon, evening, nighttime, overnight with panic attacks. Who knows? Just noticing and seeing if you figure out ways to gently be kind to yourself one piece at a time, one part of your day. I'm not saying, you know, have this goal. I've had so many of my clients that will have an unrealistic goal for themselves of like, well, I'm in therapy now, so I'm going to not ever have that thought ever. No, we're human still. We're still going to have those moments, but let's lower that expectation, that goal, to something more realistic. I will speak kinder to myself at least one more time today. Start there. Start easy. So that way you can have small successes along the way and things to celebrate rather than I did this or I failed.
I love that. Yeah. And I think as a takeaway, just to watch your judgment, like, is such a big step already to notice how often you're being judgmental of yourself and others. Just starting to observe that is going to be a huge aha for some of our listeners.
Agreed.
I will put all your info in the show notes, but in the meantime, where's the best place for people to find you if they want to ask more questions or they want to work with you in some way? What's available to them?
Yeah. So, gosh, I think I'm on every single social platform there is. If you just type in Sage Counseling and Wellness, you will probably find me. You can also do that with a quick Google search and find my website and find ways to work with me in that way. And then some things, if there's any therapists that are listening that are looking to hire interns, that's something I'm currently doing on beta pricing to slowly build up the fun things of reviews and the testimonials. I'm sure you know those things, Erica, that we build that first. And later this year, there will be an online course of how to hire interns for your practice. So I'm working on that this year.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you so much for your time today. I think that was a super helpful conversation and I'm excited for people to listen.
Yes, same here. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you haven't already done so, leave a review for the podcast on iTunes. It truly, truly helps. If this has helped you in any way, you could help other people, sensitive souls, and yogis alike to make their life even better. You'll find the show notes for today's episode at ericabelanger.com/221. And before you go, I just want to say a last thank you to the growing team behind this podcast and making this possible. And this includes all our premium members. Once again, thanks for listening. I'll see you next Monday.